This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello and welcome to Animal Central on CliffCentral.com. As you all very well know, this is the only show in South Africa dedicated to animals and the people that love them. I'm your host, Ainsley Hay, and it is a beautiful Wednesday today. And I have a very, someone that I'm quite envious of, if I'm perfectly honest, in studio today. His name is Heinz Ortmann. Hello, Heinz. Welcome.
Hi, Ainsley. Thanks for having me.
No, I'm very glad that you're here. As we were chatting earlier, it's like taken a bit of coordination to get our schedules in line to do it, but I'm glad because I'm actually looking forward to this interview. So, Heinz, you are a tour leader from Rock Jumper Birding Tours.
Yes, I am.
For your sins.
Yeah, something like that.
So tell us a bit, first a bit about Rock Jumper itself, because I obviously know what it is, but I don't think a lot of our listeners are lucky enough to know yet what it is.
Yeah, I think basically to start off with, to explain what we do, birding tour companies are, it's become quite a mainstream thing in the tourist industry nowadays. You have these specific tours geared for people who are passionate about birds.
Yes.
Generally also for wildlife, but
okay,
with a main focus on birds. And so Rock Jumper has been going for well over 15 years now.
Really?
We're an established birding tour operator and, in fact, the world's largest birding tour operator.
Really?
Yes.
So it's an international company?
Yes. So basically, in a nutshell, we offer well over 300 tours every year. Of course, not all of those run, but
okay. That's
what's offered in over 100 countries worldwide on all seven continents. So that's including down to Antarctica on cruises.
Oh, yeah. Wow. As I said, you, I'm very, very envious of you. So how long have you been with Rock Jumper?
Well, I officially started in October 2014, so
okay,
it's just over a year and a half now. But I've been birding almost all my life, and it's just a great avenue or an opportunity, should I say, to enjoy time with like-minded people, seeing some pretty amazing places and things as well.
Yeah.
On
so,
the way.
What was the last trip that you did? Where did you go?
Well, I actually did one through the eastern parts of South Africa.
Oh, nice.
So, starting out, we tend to get a lot of tours in South Africa as a guide,
okay,
and then as we build up experience, we get the opportunity to go and see other places. It just really depends on where the tours are going, where the gaps are. I had the privilege of going to Uganda last year, amongst other things.
Gosh, that's
so
amazing.
We do get to see different places.
Yeah.
In my particular instance, I did request for a focus on Africa. So I'm busy building up experience in various parts of Africa.
Fantastic.
Not that I'd turn down the opportunity to do a tour in India or South America, but for me specifically, I asked for Africa, so Uganda. I head to Malawi and Ethiopia later in the year. So, and Madagascar for a fourth time in less than 2 years. Yeah. So that's basically what we get offered.
That's amazing.
As a tour leader, yeah.
And so, what do you have to do? Because I, as you well know, I'm a fellow bird nerd, avid bird and nature lover, and I often think about my career path and think that guiding, especially the bird side of it, is something that I'm very tempted to go. So, what advice do you have for anyone thinking that this is a career move that they would like to make? What are the first steps?
Well, to be honest, with birding tours, you'd obviously need to know your birds really well.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any formal university degree or anything that I would say you need.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously need you need to be a people's person.
Yes.
You definitely need to get along with people and be an open channel of communication at the best of times, even when things aren't going as planned, especially then. A lot of that, I would say, you learn through experience as well. But I think in my particular instance, what I studied and so on is not to be a bird tour leader.
Yes.
It is something that I always wanted to do.
What did you study?
I studied conservation ecology.
Okay.
At the University of Stellenbosch, and even did a master's subsequent to that.
Okay.
At the University of Cape Town. So a lot of people would say, why guiding? And my answer to that would be, well, do something you're passionate about. Not that what I was studying is not a passion of mine. This is just a lifestyle that later in life probably wouldn't be possible.
Yes.
So for birding tour leaders or anyone wanting to go that route, certainly it would be a good idea to you know, get in touch with, there's several companies mm-hmm. around, and go birding with some of the owners or founding members, and so that you're a known entity, basically. Mm. And from there, maybe that opportunity will come. They might give you that chance to lead a few tours and take it from there. Yeah.
That's some pretty solid advice. And then something like, for you, what's that, Fugasa Dungus, those things?
Yes, so that's your Field Guide Association of South Africa. Mm-hmm. Very formal. It's something that a lot of people have been working on a lot to get everyone on board with that. Because in an industry like this, where you, especially in our case, taking a lot of more elderly people around, you need to have the right training, the right certification. There are responsibilities in what you're doing. So for GASA, it's a case of basically registering, going through the, you can do it through correspondence. There's several very well-established avenues to go through. Mm-hmm. Or one could do the courses at, there's certain what they call academies at some of the nature reserves that offer something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It would be needed, though.
Yeah.
To cover all bases.
I can imagine. Yeah. And then, so how many people on average are on the tours that you lead?
So for us, it's something as a company that we certainly pride ourselves on, is that we have a one of the best, what we say, leader to guest ratios of any birding company. You'll see that in extreme cases, it's 8 people for one tour leader. And in that case, if it's in a place in such as Madagascar, for example, we'd have a local guide with us from that area in Madagascar, with local, most recent expertise as well.
Wow.
We've gone, specifically for our South Africa tours, we've gone back to a model with one guide and 6 guests or clients maximum. That that tour will run on a minimum of 5 people, but never more than 6. So you really get your value for money, I would say.
That's fantastic. It's real sort of attention to detail at that level, and everyone is sort of, it's not this mass scream up, look at a bird, scream off to the next one.
I think one of the key things from a leader side of things is that when you have groups larger than that, it becomes rather difficult to, especially in certain habitats like rainforest, getting everyone onto a bird when you've got a couple of seconds at best. So, you know, in terms of what our clients are paying for tours like this, a smaller group works very, very well. If you do go on our website, you would see, if you did some research, that some of the tours are 10 guests.
Okay.
And in those cases, we'll have 2 rock jumper guides.
That's fantastic.
Permanently.
And what
them.
Is the website details quickly so that our guests can go and have a squiz?
Super. That's just www.rockjumperbirding.com.
Okay.
And we're also on Instagram, Facebook,
brilliant.
Anywhere really. All the social media.
Good.
It's become a very competitive industry.
Yes.
So.
But I think Rock Jumper definitely has a name that stands above the rest. You know, it's always been held in very high regard and heard very good things about the tours and all of that. So I think you're definitely onto winning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really objective in that sense if I say anything, but sure, you know, it's a sign of the times. You need to be up to date with everything, and a lot of people would prefer a few seconds, just a quick check on Facebook or something, than reading a long ream of text somewhere about a tour.
And so how long on average are the tours? What's the shortest, longest?
Well, it varies. If I can keep it simple, our classic or scheduled tours, which run every year to locations on generally a fairly fixed itinerary, which we might tinker with here and there as things change, would be anywhere from 18 to 23 days, depending on the destination. Most of them are around 19 days.
Okay.
But a place like Madagascar is 22
For
because of distances one needs to cover and so on. And then we have budget and highlight tours, which are slightly shorter, roughly 2 weeks. And there's some slight differences there, but that's all big details more than anything else. Well, but yeah.
And then, so just explain this to me. Obviously, as a South African in South Africa, birding South African birds must be relatively from a comfort zone. You're quite confident. You've had years and years in experience. Now, what on earth do you have to do now if you're going to go to Madagascar, to bird in Madagascar?
Well, that's where, you know, in terms of African birds, mm-hmm. one's quite fortunate in a sense of if I were to go to Kenya tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
And I heard a bird calling,
yes.
I'd straight away classify it into a family without okay. specifically which species,
okay.
because African birds are quite similar.
Mm-hmm.
So your time frame for preparation would vary, and it also depends on really in terms of how gifted you are at mm-hmm. what you do and how quickly you pick up calls. So South America, for example, is a place that I would need a lot more time,
yes.
because it's totally different bird families.
Wow.
Nothing like in Africa.
Yes.
The species number is phenomenal. Huge, in
yeah.
comparison. And you can go to places where you'll see or hear almost 200 species in a morning.
Oh, gosh.
So,
sure.
you know, but a place like Madagascar, to answer your question specifically, what we do is because we've got a history of having gone there for many years as
okay.
a company, there's a lot of information.
Oh.
And our guides keep notes, how things, if things change,
oh, wow.
where to specifically look for certain birds and so on. And then basically it's up to us to learn the calls, learn the areas.
Okay.
And what we would do is head to a place on a training trip or a recce,
mm-hmm.
as we call it, beforehand.
Okay.
We never tend to go to a place with guests having not
Cold,
been there
yeah.
before.
Okay.
Because of the product that you're offering, you know, these guys are, generally speaking, really switched on, and you can get caught out pretty quick if you don't know what you're doing. So,
yeah,
you know, to give you an example of my personal experience, when I headed to Uganda last year, that involved learning anywhere between 400 and 500 new bird species calls,
sure.
and then going there beforehand and thoroughly visiting the places
okay.
before I took guests on my first tour there.
Wow. Yeah, because I can, as you say, I can, you know, these are not novices that are going.
Well, it does vary. It does
okay.
vary. We certainly cater for. We would never exclude anyone.
Yes.
We feel that we certainly offer a package that
suits
certainly
all levels.
There'll be tours which will be geared towards your real listers, as we call
yes.
them, the guys ticking off birds all over the place.
Okay.
And then you'll have other tours that are geared towards your general birder with, it doesn't really matter how much experience you've had. You
okay.
can have a variety in a group, from almost no experience starting out to very experienced.
Yeah.
And so that's information that we do convey to people
okay.
and that generally our client base is well aware of.
Okay.
And how it works. And that's something that we state on our website.
Brilliant.
Quite, yeah.
No, I think it's good to offer all levels because, as you say, there's quite a variety of people's interests and passions within the birding scene. So when you take guests on these tours to these amazing places, do you guys handle all the logistics, or are guests responsible for some things?
Well, to give you an idea of how it's set up, if we in South Africa, for example, we'll do the driving as well as the guide.
Okay.
But in any overseas location, there'll be a driver as
okay.
well. There are very good reasons for
mm-hmm.
that. And then basically, as the guide, we don't deal with any pre-tour
mm-hmm.
things unless itinerary changes happen
mm-hmm.
where the office team may not necessarily have been there and so don't know what the implications are in terms
okay.
of driving a distance or so on. But in terms of the guests, you know, there's not really much other than, you know, the standard things when you go on a holiday, pretty
okay.
much. There's not much for them to worry about.
That's
in
fantastic.
Terms of, yeah, I mean, it's all pretty much all-inclusive. Yeah.
And so how often do you guide tours? Or how often do you take tours? Is it...
That's not really a very straightforward
okay.
question to answer, but to give you an idea, we have it varies. It basically depends on you as a person,
okay.
how much you want to be away, or how much you'd like to guide.
Okay.
I mean, because that's your main income source.
Yes.
Is how much you guide.
Okay.
And also your energy levels are very important. So we'll have guys that'll do 3 tours back to back to back,
sure.
which is 2 months,
sure.
if you think
Solid,
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that really comes down to, you've still got to basically be going at the same level on that third tour as you were with the guests on the first tour, because you're trying, you're obviously offering a very high quality package overall, and yeah, it's certainly it's a challenge, but it's something we like to think we get right 99% of the time.
That's amazing. And because it's dealing with individual people, and you know, it's, you know, 22, 23 day, 19 day tour. Yeah. That's 19 days of a big smile every day.
Something along those lines. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so what is your favorite destination? I mean, it must be absolutely impossible to pick one, because you must go to some pretty amazing places.
Yeah.
What stands out as, I'd say, most favorite, most memorable to date?
I don't know. I'm super patriotic.
Yeah,
so
good.
The more I see of South Africa, the more I just am amazed at how beautiful it is. Having been, you know, to Victoria Falls and to East Africa and parts of the Okavango Delta and Etosha and places like that, Madagascar, lemurs right around you and things like that. I don't know. I'd be very hard pressed to, in terms of Africa anyway, because I don't have much experience on any of the other continents as yet. But South Africa's right up there. I think we don't sell it well enough in the tourist sector overall.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I lived in London for 4 years and I did a lot of traveling when I was there, and I went to some absolutely insanely amazing places.
Yeah.
But now that I've been home and I'm still traveling, but I'm traveling locally, and this country is amazing.
Yeah.
And just the variety and how things can change. I was lucky enough on Friday, in my previous position, there was a foreign judge that came over that I had to entertain. So I just popped her in my car and I took her up just to Dinner King. And I mean, it's nothing, Dinner King's nothing to rage about. It's, we've certainly got better places, but even just that literally I can get in my car and drive for an hour and go somewhere. And she, luckily, she was a birder as well. So we had such a whirl of a time.
Yeah,
and
it
was
awesome.
Yeah, it was absolutely wonderful. And I think, as you say, a lot of South Africans sometimes get a bit blasé about what we've got, and we do take it to granted. But I mean, she comes from Holland, and she couldn't believe. I said, oh, you know, this is how many bird species that we have. And what? Oh my gosh, and you have so many. I didn't realize how many birds we have with long tails.
Yeah.
Until we saw mouse birds, you know, magpie shrikes, and every single bird we saw had a long tail. I was like, oh, okay. I suppose we do compared to Holland.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's something that we certainly do a lot of tours in South Africa.
Great.
As a company. And we get a lot of people who, for them, it would be not just their first visit to South Africa, but quite often when they're from the States, for example, quite a few people, their first time in Africa.
Oh, brilliant.
And so, you know, we've got a specific tour. There's one actually on the go at the moment.
Okay.
That's 11 days. It's one of our shortest, but it's 5 days in the Cape and 5 days in Kruger National Park.
Oh, that's pretty perfect.
And with that direct flight from Cape Town to Skukuza, you've really got very little traveling time in between. And you see, arguably, if you were to ask anyone or advise anyone coming to South Africa who had 2 weeks, those would be the two regions.
Definitely. That's what I told the judge on Friday.
Would be right high up on the list. And that's not taking anything away from the Drakensberg or all these other places.
Exactly.
But if you were down to 10, 12 days in South Africa,
those two
spots would certainly
without a
be.
Doubt. So do they do a pelagic included in that? So
yes,
you're covering all pretty much.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, a pelagic trip is in South Africa anyway, we do some out of Durban, but mostly from Simonstown and Cape Town. Mm-hmm. And that's specifically to see albatrosses, which are, you know, to see that it's pretty difficult to put into words the experience the first time.
I haven't been in one yet.
But it's obviously weather dependent.
Yeah.
And because of safety, you can't just go out in any sort of weather.
Nah.
But yes, certainly one of the days is set aside just for the pelagic. And
that's
if it
amazing.
Does go, it's certainly something that if one hasn't been to Tasmania or other places where there are more albatross species, it's something that I think regardless you'd be blown away by.
Yeah, Flip, even I'd happily go on that tour. So how did you get into birding?
Well, that's basically due to my parents.
Good job.
So my father's a large animal vet, mm-hmm. and this is predating cell phones still.
Yes.
So he enjoyed getting away from, you know, the constant hassle of answering the telephone. Mm. Not that he doesn't enjoy his work, but...
You need a break.
As a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, I remember things like going to Itala Game Reserve in Zululand,
oh,
being
wow.
charged by a black rhino. Things
oh,
like that
man.
Stick with me, or stuck with me. And what I'm thankful for is that he didn't point out the little brown jobs, the small things.
Okay.
He pointed out your big, colorful
yes.
saddle-billed storks mm-hmm. and martial eagles and things like that. And I think it was just a general, you know, upbringing of enjoying the outdoors mm. on weekends, going on hikes in the mountains, things like that, just encouraging us to do things outdoors.
Brilliant.
And that stuck with me. And then it's quite bizarre, but an English oral in my 4th year of school, which was on hobbies. And
yes.
I thought that's the first recollection of telling a whole group of people about my, other than my parents and close family, that I really enjoyed birding. And so it's quite a long time already.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, I don't just specifically have an interest in birds, but mm-hmm. it's certainly the main passion, if you can put it that way. And I certainly am doing something that I enjoy a lot. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I collect butterflies and
okay.
do all sorts of other things. I'm quite involved with various projects with various animals and things across the country on a conservation level, and
mm-hmm.
that's my background
mm-hmm.
and something I'll look into going back to when
yeah.
if it happens
yeah.
my guiding days are over.
You hang up your guide boots. I don't know if you can ever truly do that though.
I don't think so. I mean, I think I've been guiding my whole life in a way,
because
yeah. I very quickly, because of the time I had reading through bird books and things, very quickly I wouldn't say surpassed, you know, my family's knowledge or whatever, but I was the person relied on to
yeah.
identify things.
Okay.
And so technically I was guiding
yeah.
from a very young age. Not formally, of course, but not as a job per se. But yeah, that's
oh, that's awesome.
That's the short of it, really.
No, and it's I think it's such a wonderful career, because it really, there is a degree of flexibility. It's hard. It's very hard. It's hard dealing with people. It's hard, you know, dealing with some of the conditions you have to deal with. But I think that it is a very, from what I can understand as an outsider, a very, what looks like a very rewarding career. And I think there is, as you say, I don't think a lot of people ever fully hang up their guide boots.
No,
they dabble quite a bit.
I'm sure they do. I'm not at that stage, so we'll see someday. Yeah. But it's certainly very rewarding.
Yeah.
Challenging, but super rewarding.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. We will be back after the break.
Helen tucked herself into the hotel room bed and noted that the feather down duvets were the softest she'd ever felt. And now, more on the dust mite that is causing the latest outbreak of avian flu across the city. It was hard to describe such softness, but armfuls of adorable baby birds sprung to mind.
Thanks, Ken. Health professionals have just confirmed that the mites have been breeding predominantly on duck feathers.
Helen cocooned herself in layer upon layer of the abundant feathery duvet, disappearing beneath the cloud-like swaddling.
The mites are said to be accessing the human body through nasal inhalation, and that's where the contamination begins.
This moment was so spiritual for Helen, she began doing her yoga breathing exercises, inhaling deeply through the nose.
Experts have asked the public to be on the lookout for early symptoms, including elevated temperatures as well as rapid swelling of the extremities.
Helen was overcome with a blazing, sensual heat. Her lips felt effortlessly pouty, and even her breasts felt surprisingly full. At Road Lodge, there's no chance of our feather duvets giving you avian flu, because there are no feather duvets. Road Lodge, the no-frills one-star hotel.
This is cliffcentral.com.
Right, so we are back, and we are still talking birds and bird tours, and I'm sitting here fantasizing about being in Madagascar. So when are you next in Madagascar?
I head off that way in towards the end of July.
Is it seasonal? Are the tours seasonal to somewhere like
Madagascar? Well, it varies for a place like that. So July would also be winter for them. And we offer what we call a highlights tour, which is over 15 days and doesn't go to as many places as it's a shorter tour.
Mm-hmm.
A bit more detail about that. You go to the main places to see as many of Madagascar's endemic birds, so only in Madagascar, and then the lemurs.
wow.
Yeah, so that's what it's about. And yeah, September to Malawi, and then most of November I'll be in Ethiopia as well.
Wow, sure. And what is Ethiopia like?
Well, it'll be my first time, so I'm really looking forward to it. And just on a side note, my favorite mammal in Africa is the African wild dog. Ethiopia has the Ethiopian wolf, which is Africa's most endangered carnivore. So that's one of the things I'm looking forward
to. Do they usually see them on the tours?
Generally, we do tend to find them.
That's amazing.
Obviously, lots of birds. That's obviously the main thing. But I think that's something one can't emphasize enough, is that a birding tour does not mean that you drive past animals. Generally, your birders will be interested in animals.
Yeah.
Maybe the one exception would be, maybe not even that, but one of our bird-focused tours in South America, where we try and see 1,000 species in 4 weeks. Maybe there you don't quite have the time.
1,000 species in 4 weeks?
That's in Colombia. Yeah.
And that happens?
We've managed it a couple of times already, yeah.
Holy cow! 1,000 species?
Yeah.
Scheiße. Wow. What is your life list?
Well, mine is currently on just over 1,300. I've fallen behind in Southern Africa for obvious reasons, because we're away most of the time. So, and I don't twitch. So a twitcher is someone who'd, hear of a bird in Namibia somewhere.
Gets in a car and drives to the Cape.
Or flies up there.
To go and see a leaf
nerve. Yeah, exactly. Nothing against that at all.
No.
It's fantastic. It creates, a platform for people to meet each other as well. And it happens a lot, which is great. And I think with technology the way it is in South Africa, certainly we're finding more and more people twitching rarities like that than we did 5 or 10 years ago. And if that's what you like doing, great. I do keep a Southern Africa list, and I do know what I haven't seen and would like to see, but it doesn't mean that I don't enjoy looking at a bird that I've seen thousands of times.
That's awesome.
And I think that's, we get a lot of people that are that way as well. You'll get, there's a chap from Sweden who's a client of ours, and he's well over 9,000 in the world. And he'll enjoy watching a mouse bird just
that's
as much
brilliant.
As something like a Pell's fishing owl.
That is amazing.
So although he knows whatever he hasn't seen and where he can see it, and that's the main focus
driven.
When he goes on a tour, he won't necessarily not look at anything else.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So how was Rock Jumper formed? Who was the brains behind this?
Well, initially Adam Riley and Jonathan Rousseau together.
South African?
Both South African.
Good guy.
So both are not, coming back to your question earlier, how to get into bird guiding, Adam's a chartered accountant by trade. Jonathan's a doctor. So
brilliant.
It's similar in a lot of ways. So that was mid to late 90s that Rock Jumper was formed. They were informally doing tours.
Okay.
Before that, but Rock Jumper per se, Rock Jumper CC anyway, formally registered in 2001.
Okay.
But we've officially been doing tours 1998, around there, since
Brilliant.
Then. Yeah.
And do the founders still, do they still guide?
Oh, yes. Well, Adam does the odd tour here and there. Wife and kids, so it's not as easy getting away. But the last couple of years, we've been heavily involved with the American Birding Association.
Wow.
So they approached us in 2014 to help out organize their conference, their overseas conference, which we held in South Africa. And that's where that idea came about of the 5 days in Cape Town and the 5 days in Kruger.
That's
where that tour came from. Super successful. We've just finished the second one, which was in India, and I believe it was a huge success.
Okay.
So much so that we're already starting planning the one to New Zealand at the beginning of next year. So it's really a nice way of a lot of different people. Rock Jumper is something that the people we get on that Cape to Kruger trip now it's by word of mouth, largely from friends.
Oh, that's amazing.
You should do this rock jumper tour. Or it's similar for a lot of companies, but with the American Birding Association being quite large, and it's a very popular pastime in the States, and growing quite nicely. So it's really given us a nice base, or a further base, or further support base than what we had. And hopefully that continues. It gives the guys in the office a lot more extra work. But when it does end up going well, which it has totally done so far, it certainly is, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. So how many tour leaders are part of Rock Jumper? It's quite a big company, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And again, not a straightforward answer.
Yeah.
We have a number of part-time leaders. What we like to do is, as many of our scheduled tours as possible will be run by guides that are fully guiding as full-time leaders. You'll see a distinction on our website, just so that you know that understanding is there for the clients. I think on last count we're 18 or 19 full-time guides.
Sure,
but that would include someone like Adam would be down as a full-time leader, but it varies hugely. Some of the guys are leading 10 to 12, 18 to 19 day trips a year.
Sure.
Others are doing a handful, helping out with our private tours department, which I haven't even touched on, which is where
that existed.
Basically what happens there is we get a lot of requests. Again, it's not specific to South Africa, but from guests who say, for example, I have 3 weeks in South Africa at the end of 2016, could you put something together for us? And there it might only be one person, two people,
fantastic.
Three people. It'll generally be people that have traveled together before, for example. So I've done several where I've had four people from the UK.
Oh,
I had
brilliant.
Four people from Sweden, end of January to the middle of Feb through South Africa. And they'll quite often have very specific requests.
Mm-hmm.
So they might have a target list of birds that they're looking for. And so we cater for that by putting together the best itinerary for
That's
their
brilliant.
Needs specifically.
Sure.
And the guys that do that in the office do a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
I think the office team's fantastic. They're busy all the time.
So they handle all the logistics of flights, accommodation. Wow, they must have ninja-like organization experience. I mean,
it's a massive operation.
Yeah.
I don't think one can understate that really. And it's various departments and a nice work environment, and everyone chips in more than their fair share.
Mm.
And I think, we've grown massively in the last few years, and the guides that have been at Rock Jumper for 7, 8, 9 years would be able to say even more on that, how it's changed and how it's grown, to the point where we're moving into new offices later this year, which is quite exciting.
Where's your head office based?
Currently in Pietermaritzburg, with satellite offices in Cape Town and so on. And our guides are based all over the world, so we've got one guy who's in the States who does our South America trips, for example, mostly. One of our other guides in New Zealand, as an example, does the Australasia stuff. So that helps hugely where you've got that extra expertise locally.
Mm-hmm.
We'd obviously still use local guides in most places. And then, with technology as it is, internet, Skype, all of this, one can stay in touch far easier. So it makes it possible.
Exactly.
No,
it's quite an amazing feat that you managed to pull off, and it all looks quite seamless. But there's a lot of little mechanical cogs going on in the background to make these things happen. So, I need your advice. So I'm an avid birder. Was a bit did it, and then obviously went to England and got. I mean, in England, yes, there are options: big fat wood pigeons and jackdaws.
Yes, not much though.
So I got a bit rusty. I'm now back into birding with a vengeance. Bloody bird calls, though. And for me, when I lived in the bush, it was easy. I picked up my calls very quickly and I retained them very quickly. How do you retain that without when you're not out in the field hearing birds all the time?
Again, that's something that from individual to individual might vary slightly. So you'll have guys that listen to a call once or twice and it's there.
Yeah.
But my suggestion and what changed birding for me was when the Roberts multimedia was put onto, initially it was on a PDA, these little computers. I actually got one in from the States from my uncle.
Oh, brilliant.
And that sort of meant that when you went to a place and you'd obviously know these are the birds that are possible in that area, something would almost click that, okay, I've heard that before, just from repetition of listening to it. Nowadays on the app, back then there weren't, those things didn't exist.
Yes, true.
8, 9, 10 years ago. So that's what changed it for me, because I spent hours in the books, you know. And you're right. I think for me personally, which is why I like a few more extra days at a new place before a tour, whereas other guys might get away with two or three, is that doing it in the field helps a lot, because even your apps will have, they'll have your standard call and you'll head out there.
Birds don't read textbooks or apps.
You'll head out there and you know, it gets even more complicated further up in Africa where there's a dialect in East versus West Africa for the same species. So it's not as easy. We're fortunate. We have a fantastic database that we've built up over the years, and we go out with microphones to make recordings and so on. But certainly, you with the app, you'll have the standard call, which is a great starting point.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And my advice would be just spend time listening to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do. But it really, I think it is something that you need to, as you say, practice, but it is damn tricky. And I'm always amazed when I go out with higher bird nerds and they're like, oh, that's that. And I'm like, no, I it's a familiar call. I know the call. I know it, but I don't know it. Definitely not confidently enough to call it off with the first, first noise sometimes.
And just, you know, as encouragement for anyone out there listening, if you're struggling, there are even bird tour leaders who struggle with calls.
Yeah.
It's not something that is second nature to everyone.
Yeah.
And so just keep going. You know, keep listening to those calls, spend the time outdoors, learn your backyard patch, and then move from there, basically, is what I'd also say. If you live in an area where you can get out, if you can go to the local nature reserve, or in my case, walk down to the Mgeni River not far from the house or whatever. Yeah. Just spend time getting to know the stuff on your doorstep, and then, you know, small steps.
Yeah.
If you look at the 950 plus in Southern Africa, it's going to be overwhelming. So,
exactly.
You know, just get to know a few and then move from there.
Yeah. No, that's very sound advice. Thank you. So why is it that there are so few female guides?
That's a difficult one to answer. I don't think it's simple. I think it's something certainly that, I guess, thinking just at the top of my head with friends of mine from other companies and so on, it is a serious lack.
Yeah. Obviously, if you know, some females do decide to have families, and I think that would be a big evidence, because if you've got kids, you can't really say bye, even though if I were to ever have kids, which I'm not going to, I more than likely would say bye.
Yeah, sure.
In 2 months.
I actually don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, but it's something that I've noticed, and I find it quite interesting, and I've never.
There's certainly a lot of lady or woman birders out there.
Yes.
So can't really put a finger on it. I don't know. I mean, it's
but it's not just me.
No, it's certainly true.
There are fewer.
I can't speak for companies in the States or whatever. Certainly if you were to go, it's slightly different guiding, but if you were to go to Cape Point or you know, I've noticed that there are a few more ladies than there were a few years ago. But, it's no, I can't really put a finger on it, to be honest. It might be the family thing.
But you should still get young lasses, you know.
True. I think there's also there is quite a bit of pressure in South Africa on getting a university degree.
Okay.
And I think that might already take quite a proportional high portion of people out of it immediately, because you might think, okay, I'm going to study my accounting or engineering and then go into it.
And then it just
you finish
happen.
Your degree and you say, well, it's 3 years until I'm a registered accountant or whatever. Yeah. Then you work.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, I've just finished articles, now I'm going to earn more.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
it's
get stuck into that.
Not that don't want to make it sound like you shouldn't be an accountant or anything, but maybe that's just me trying to think of why it might be the case.
It's a mystery.
Yeah.
It's a mystery. So give us the website details again, please. So people now, I mean, I'm sold. I want to go on all of the tours, including the Cape Town and Krugerrand, all of them. So what are the website details again for our listeners?
It's straightforward, www.rockjumperbirding.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rock Jumper Birding Tours on Instagram. You'll find us on Facebook.
Twitter
as well, yes.
Great. So what are some of your biggest bogeys? You must have some pretty spectacular bogeys. So listeners, bogeys are a bird that you really should have seen, or you were really hoping to see, or it was right there and you could hear it and then you just never saw it. It's really, they're quite a sore spot.
Well, there are a couple. I've seen them since.
Okay,
but
good.
I think it might make a few people out there feel a bit better about themselves.
Okay.
So Pell's Fishing Owl would come to mind, purely because the family friends that we always went on holiday with, you know, we went to Ndumu Game Reserve, didn't find the thing. They went a few weeks later, saw two. That sort of thing. And African Finfoot was another one that took a long time going to the right places. And then
you get the Finfoot?
Of all places, the high-level bridge at Skukuza on the Sabi River, right there. Yeah.
Ah, man.
You know, every book says that's where it is. Just have a look.
And I've spent how many hours sitting there?
It's not so straightforward. Yeah, so everyone has their stories, their birds that you think to yourself, oh goodness, I've seen 700 in Southern Africa. How can I have a gap on that one?
Man.
But that's the beauty of it. Mm. And it's why, you know, for example, on our South Africa trip, quite often on the eastern portion the last day, we'll go up Sani Pass into Lesotho.
Oh, stunning.
And you know, the guys that drive up and down that pass every day will be asked by people, how can you do that? Go up every day the same place. It's because it's nature.
Exactly.
It's different from one day to the next.
Yeah.
I can go to a lot of places, you know, as an example, if someone said to me, you know, Etosha, tomorrow are you keen? No question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm packing my bags,
you
know. So even though I've been there several times, Kruger National Park, same thing. But then there are all these places that one hasn't seen.
Exactly.
So,
what's top of your list of haven't been to yet?
In South Africa, I'd say because I've missed it at its peak is the Namaqualand area with the flowers.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to the Richtersveld or the Galagadi proper yet. It's the one big gap on my map. I was fortunate to get to a few others in the last while. Mapungubwe, I would highly recommend for anyone who enjoys scenery, birding, and being relaxed.
Yeah.
Just really super place. It is far from, even from Joburg, it's on the border of Zimbabwe and Botswana.
Yes.
It's one of our lesser known national parks, but highly, highly recommended.
Awesome.
Just beautiful scenery that you're unlikely to see anywhere else in South Africa. And then certainly, you know, parts of the Eastern Cape still, you know, you can't go to the Wild Coast enough whilst it's still wild.
Yep.
Further up north, certainly really looking forward to Ethiopia, as I mentioned.
That'd be amazing.
For some reason, I guess it's my, you know, as a kid I used to have several parrots at home that are bred and hand-raised, you know, Australasia, Australia, lots of different parrots.
Yeah.
That's high up on the list. But if all goes well, I'll be heading to Papua New Guinea next year for the Birds of Paradise.
Shut the front door. I'm finished. I'm done. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So
and this is a job. And you're going to freaking Papua New Guinea. I'm dying. Dying.
It is a job. It's a lot of work.
But damn, that's I'll work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
That's one of our, you know, destinations that, to give you an idea, our two tours for middle of next year are already fully booked by the looks of things. So, it's one of our premier destinations where we've successfully led well over 30 tours now on scheduled trips. So if you think maximum 3 a year. That's a minimum of 10 years. It's much longer than that, because in an initial period, often to a new destination, 1 year it might run, the next there might not be as much interest, or you build it up over time.
Okay.
And things happen, like West Africa with the Ebola thing. Cameroon's become a pretty difficult place to sell, unfortunately.
Mm.
We used to have
two
tours going there. You know, we're only offering one next year.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get there. I'll be co-leading on that one. It'll be my training trip, basically. That's in March next year. But we'll see. I mean, with all these things going on, and it's a huge pity, but it's one of the reasons I wanted to do Africa initially. Lots of wilderness left, so.
Yeah, and that's
compared to certainly other parts of the world.
Exactly, and it's pretty amazing to get to some of those places, because I don't think that there are a lot of people that will be able to say in their lifetime that they get there.
Yeah.
Did you get the shovel?
I'll rub it in if you want me to. So it's that trip to Uganda, how we set it up, it's actually one of the few tours where your main target species you've got a very good chance of seeing on your first morning.
Damn it.
The first morning of the trip.
First morning?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And we were fortunate. Last year we had two full tours to Uganda. We've got another one heading off in July. And, everyone got fantastic. They were
over the moon,
just blown away. Wow. And to give you an idea, one of our guests, who's very well traveled, well over 6,000 birds in the world, he said hands down the coolest thing he has seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's prehistoric. It feels out of place.
I've seen in captivity.
Yeah.
Tragically.
But Uganda's the place. I mean, Zambia is also good, but it's a bit more logistically difficult to get there. And currently, still Uganda's more than fine to visit, certainly, and there are lots of things to see there that are unique.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good chance those tree climbing lions in Queen Elizabeth National Park and things like that. You do get that in other parts of Africa, but not as regularly. There's that one pride that's known for that. So yeah,
that's absolutely amazing. Yeah. Oh well, on that note. I can't, sorry, I'm just having shovels. Shovels are such a thing for me. I've just always been obsessed with them. And I think to see them properly in the wild must be one of those memories that you will take.
Oh, it's certainly unforgettable,
yeah,
I'd say.
Sure.
As long as your memory holds.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well, Heinz, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I've certainly learned a lot, and I hope our listeners too. And I think it's definitely give Rock Jumper a squiz. As you say, it's not only foreigners who go on the tours.
Yeah.
It's local people as well. So it is an accessible way, and it certainly sounds like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you so much.
Keep well, and I'll be back next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.